The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're digging into a really influential book, Martin Seligman's Flourish. And this isn't, you know, your average self-help book.
No, definitely not. This is more like a scientific blueprint for what well-being actually looks like. And it comes straight from the guy who basically launched the whole positive psychology movement.
Right, the science of happiness. But here's the kicker, isn't it? In Flourish, Seligman himself says his original theory of happiness, well, it was missing some key pieces.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing, really. The founder saying, hang on, my first idea wasn't quite right. Take some guts, intellectually speaking.
Absolutely. So our mission today is to unpack that journey. Why did he move away from just authentic happiness?
And what's this replacement? We need to get into his PERMA model. It's meant to be this measurable, teachable framework for real well-being, going beyond just feeling good.
Towards actually flourishing. That's the goal.
Exactly.
Flourishing.
Okay, let's set the stage.
Yeah.
Martin Seligman. I mean, he's a giant in psychology over the last, what, 50 years?
Oh, easily. Former head of the American Psychological Association, major researcher at Penn. But, you know, to really get his shift to positive psychology, you have to look at where he started.
Right. His early work wasn't exactly cheerful, was it?
Not at all. It was groundbreaking, but focused on the negative. He's famous for defining learned helplessness back in the 70s.
That idea that you just give up after facing inescapable bad situations over and over.
Precisely. It was a huge step in understanding things like depression, how people learn to feel powerless.
So he spent years figuring out what goes wrong with people.
Yeah. But then he had this kind of epiphany. Like, why are psychologists only studying damage and disorder? What about what makes people strong? What makes them resilient or even thrive?
And that question basically sparked the whole positive psychology movement. It really did. But then, years later, even after the movement was successful, he looked back at his own key text, Authentic Happiness, and thought, this isn't quite hitting the mark scientifically.
Okay, so what were the problems? What made him say, we need a new theory?
Well, he laid out three main flaws. First, he felt it relied way too much on just objective life satisfaction as the main goal.
You mean like asking someone, how happy are you, 1 to 10?
Exactly. And he realized that number is just too flimsy. It bounces around based on your mood, whether you had a good breakfast. You know, it's not a solid scientific measure for a truly good life.
Yeah, that makes sense. Your score could swing wildly day to day.
Weirdly. Second flaw. The old model didn't really give enough weight to achievement or mastery.
How so?
Well, people clearly chase goals and try to get good at things, right? Even when it's hard or stressful or it doesn't bring immediate pleasure. Think about training for a marathon or mastering a complex skill.
Right. There's a satisfaction in accomplishment itself.
Exactly. And his original theory didn't capture that well enough. And the third thing, which is maybe the most important.
Yes.
It kind of blurred the lines between happiness, which is really just an emotion, a feeling, and the much bigger, more complex idea of overall well-being.
Okay, so happiness is just one part of it, not the whole picture.
Precisely. So if happiness wasn't the right target, what was the proper focus for psychology, according to this new thinking?
This is where the big shift comes in.
He said the real subject isn't happiness, it's flourishing. And that led to his well-being theory.
Which needed to be more rigorous.
Yes, it had to have distinct parts, elements that people pursue for their own sake, not just because they lead to happiness. And crucially, these elements had to be measurable independently.
And that's the PERMA model, P-E-R-M-A.
That's the one, the blueprint for flourishing.
Okay, let's break it down then. The power here is that it makes living well seem less fuzzy, right? More like something you can actually build. So starting with P.
P is for positive emotions. This is the part that feels most like traditional happiness. You know, feeling good joy, gratitude, hope, love, awe, serenity.
The hedonic aspect, feeling pleasure.
Right. But Seligman is clear. This is vital, but it's only one part of the whole. One fifth, basically.
Okay. So E is next. Engagement. What's that about? It sounds like just being busy.
But it's not just business. It's about that state of flow Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi described.
Oh, right. Getting completely lost in an activity.
Exactly. Totally absorbed. Time flies. You're using your skills to the max. And the activity itself is the reward. You're not doing it for some external outcome, but for the sheer involvement.
Like an artist painting or a coder deep in a problem.
or a musician playing, or even someone gardening intently. And notice, you might not feel happy in the P sense while you're deep in flow.
Right, you might be intensely focused, even stressed, but still deeply engaged, like that surgeon example.
Precisely. Intense focus, not necessarily giddy joy, but deeply rewarding.
Okay, that makes sense. Then R is for relationships.
Yes. Positive connections with other people. And Seligman makes this really simple but powerful point. Think about the best moments in your life. How many of them happened when you were totally alone?
Probably not many. Births, celebrations, overcoming challenges usually involves others.
Exactly. He says very little of what is positive in life happens in solitude. We need that connection, support, love, belonging. It's fundamental.
We're social creatures after all.
Deeply. These relationships often form the bedrock for everything else in PERMA.
Makes sense. Next up, M meaning.
This taps into that basic human drive to be part of something bigger than just ourselves.
Like belonging to a cause or a community.
Or dedicating yourself to your family or a spiritual path or a political movement. It's about feeling your life serves a purpose beyond just your own needs and desires, contributing to something significant.
Okay. And finally, A, accomplishment or achievement.
This is the one Seligman felt he'd shortchanged in his earlier work. It's about pursuing mastery, competence, success winning, achieving goals for its own sake.
Even if it doesn't necessarily make you feel happy in the P sense or build R or provide M.
Exactly. There's an inherent satisfaction in setting out to do something and achieving it. That feeling of competence, of getting things done, it stands on its own as a source of well-being.
Like finally finishing that DIY project, or hitting a sales target, or learning a new language, the achievement itself feels good.
Right. That intrinsic value of getting better, of succeeding. And this A pillar, this focus on competence and achievement, really connects to some of the big real-world applications.
Which brings us nicely to the next part. How does PERMA actually work in practice? How does it scale up from just an idea?
Well, a great example linked to A for accomplishment is the work on grit.
Ah, Angela Duckworth's research, right? She worked with Seligman.
She did. And grit is all about sustained passion and perseverance toward long-term goals. Sticking with things, basically, even when they're tough.
And the surprising finding was?
Time after time, in really different settings, West Point cadets, kids in spelling bees, salespeople, grit turned out to be a better predictor of success than innate talent or IQ.
Wow. So it's not just about being smart or gifted, it's about sticking power.
Exactly. Which means A isn't just some vague desire, it connects to a character strength grit that can actually be measured and potentially cultivated.
And we see this idea of cultivating well-being skills playing out in education too, right? You mentioned positive education.
Yes. The Geelong Grammar School in Australia is the classic case study Seligman highlights. It's a really ambitious project.
What did they actually do there?
They didn't just add like one happiness class. They wove well-being skill, PERMA skills, essentially into the entire school culture and curriculum.
So teaching things like gratitude, empathy, resilience, alongside math and history.
Exactly. Things like identifying character strengths, learning optimistic thinking patterns, practicing mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence showed it worked.
How so? Better grades.
That too, eventually. But also, crucially, improvements in student mental health. Less depression, less anxiety. They were focusing on building flourishing humans, not just academic achievers.
That's a pretty profound shift for a school. But maybe even more ambitious was applying this to the military.
Oh, absolutely. The Comprehensive Soldier Fitness, CSF, program of the U.S. Army, that was, and probably still is, the largest scale application of positive psychology principles ever attempted.
Over 1 million soldiers, right. What was the core idea?
It was a radical shift. Instead of waiting for soldiers to develop PTSD after trauma and then treating it, the goal was to build psychological resilience before deployment. Proactive, not reactive.
Building mental armor, essentially.
Kind of, yeah. Building psychological fitness. They treated it like physical fitness, something you measure and train.
How did they even measure that?
They developed the Global Assessment Tool, the GAT, like a baseline checkup for psychological strengths and weaknesses across the PERMA dimensions, plus some others.
And the training part, that was the MRT.
Right, the Master Resilience Training. Sergeants were trained to teach these skills down the ranks. Practical cognitive behavioral stuff based directly on positive psychology research.
Like what kind of skills?
Things like learning to identify and dispute catastrophic thinking patterns in real time. Techniques for energy management under stress. Learning to leverage your specific character strengths when facing adversity. actively building strong relationships. It made psychological well-being part of military readiness.
That's huge. And this is also where post-traumatic growth, or PTG, comes in.
Yes, that's a really powerful concept explored within this framework. PTG is the idea that experiencing trauma doesn't just have to lead back to baseline or even to lasting damage.
It can actually lead to growth, like being better off in some ways than before the trauma.
Exactly. It sounds counterintuitive, but the research shows it happens. People can emerge from horrific experiences with a deeper appreciation for life, stronger relationships, a clear sense of purpose, new possibilities they didn't see before.
Not just bouncing back, but bouncing forward.
That's a great way to put it. And PTG isn't automatic, but things like making sense of the trauma, meaning-making, having strong social support, relationships, and actively processing the experience cognitively seem to permeate it.
Wow. Okay, so we've seen PERMA applied in schools, in the entire U.S. Army. These are massive systems. How do we bring this back down to earth? What can someone listening right now actually do?
Well, the good news is some of the most effective interventions are actually really simple. The classic one, Seligman Champions, is the three good things exercise.
Also called what went well, right?
Yep, super simple. Every night before bed, just take a few minutes to write down three things that went well for you that day. They can be tiny things.
Like enjoying a cup of coffee or a nice chat with someone.
Absolutely. Doesn't have to be monumental.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the crucial second step.
There's more to it.
Yes. For each good thing, you also write down why it happened. What caused it?
Okay, so not just I enjoyed my coffee, but I enjoyed my coffee because I took 5 minutes to savor it without distractions.
Exactly. Or my meeting went well because I prepared thoroughly. Or my friend cheered me up because they are thoughtful. That causal analysis part is key.
Why is that so important?
Because it trains your brain to notice the causes of good events, shifting you away from a pessimistic explanatory style towards an optimistic one. And the research is solid. Doing this for just 1 week can measurably boost happiness and reduce depressive symptoms for months afterward.
1 week. That's pretty amazing for such a small intervention.
It really is. Low effort, high impact.
Okay, what else? You mentioned strengths earlier.
Right, leveraging your signature strengths. This ties into engagement, E, and also meaning M. First step is finding out what your top strengths are.
How do you do that?
There's a free, scientifically validated survey online called the VIA Survey of Character Strengths. VIA stands for Values in Action. Takes maybe 15, 20 minutes.
And it tells you your top strengths, like curiosity or kindness or leadership.
Exactly. It ranks 24 universal character strengths. The idea is to identify your top five, your signature strengths. Then the task is simple. Try to use one of your signature strengths in a new way each day.
So if creativity is one of mine, I should try to, I don't know, find a creative solution to a boring problem at work.
Perfect example. Or if gratitude is a strength, make a point of writing a thank you note you wouldn't normally send. If it's love of learning, intentionally learn something completely new.
And doing this boosts well-being.
Yes, because you're engaging more deeply, using what you're naturally good at, which feels authentic and energizing. It directly hits the E and often the M in PERMA.
These practical tools are great, and it all connects back to this bigger idea of positive health, doesn't it? This isn't just about mental state.
Absolutely not. There's a growing body of evidence showing strong links between psychological well-being, optimism, life satisfaction, strong relationships, purpose, and actual physical health outcomes.
Like what kind of outcomes?
Things like lower risk of cardiovascular disease, stronger immune system responses, even increased longevity. Being psychologically flourishing seems to be genuinely good for your body.
So mind and body really are deeply connected here.
Undeniably. Which leads Seligman to his ultimate grand vision, really. If well-being is this important, and if it's measurable and teachable,
then maybe we should be focusing on it at a societal level.
Exactly. He argues passionately that governments and institutions need to move beyond just measuring economic success, like gross domestic product, GDP.
Because a rich country isn't necessarily a flourishing country.
Right. We need metrics for gross national well-being, or GNW.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if national progress was judged not just by wealth, but by the PERMA scores of its population.
That would be a radical change in priorities.
Huge. He even set this audacious goal called Target 51.
What's that?
The goal that by the year 2051, 51% of the world's population will be measurably flourishing according to the principles of PERMA. A moonshot for sure, but it sets a direction.
Wow. Okay, so wrapping this all up, the core message from Flourish seems to be, Well-being isn't something you just stumble upon or hope for.
No, it's not passive. It's an active process. It's about deliberately cultivating these five pillars: positive emotion, engagement, relationships, meaning, and accomplishment.
And these are skills, things you can learn, practice, and measure. It's a fundamentally optimistic view of human potential, isn't it?
It really is. It shifts the focus from fixing what's broken to building what's strong.
Which leaves us with a pretty challenging final thought, I think.
It is.
Well, if flourishing is measurable and teachable, as Seligman argues, then doesn't that place kind of responsibility on our institutions?
Ah, you mean like schools, workplaces, communities?
Yeah. If they can foster PERMA, shouldn't they? So maybe the question for you listening is, which institutions in your life need to think less about just the bottom line or just test scores and more about actively building the conditions for everyone to flourish?
That's a powerful question to ponder. If well-being is a skill set, who should be teaching it?
It's definitely food for thought. This has been a fascinating deep dive into Seligman's blueprint for a flourishing life.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.